Crouch. Bind. Set.
Joe presents the House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
It is week 5 of Joe's House of Rugby, together with our friends at Guinness. It is a great pleasure to be back with you, and I think it's fair to say we are settling in nicely to our new home. It is welcome back once again to two men looking slightly bashed up, but for very differing reasons. Welcome back from Augusta. You haven't cut your lip out playing golf, have you?
No, I felt that it was only right that one person on this panel play rugby, so I played on Sunday.
Good, well done you. How did you get on? Still got the magic?
If you pressed super slow-mo, then yes, maybe, when you're running in treacle. But no, it was good fun.
We
played for Rugby for Heroes 15 against a French Legends 15.
Always doing a lot of work for charity, aren't you? Don't like to talk about it.
I think
you got the cut on a cucumber sandwich or something.
Crusts off.
Yeah, you don't get cuts on crusts off.
Exactly. And you're a bit bashed up as well. You've got a hurty foot.
I have got a hurty foot, yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, not ideal. I've been struggling sort of all season with this ankle, an ankle injury. I kind of had a few false starts with Saints. I missed the first game through kind of back spasm, which was just bizarre. Then I played a couple of games, and the next day my ankle was in pieces. And it just got progressively worse. I played against Claremont, and I came off, and the next day I just couldn't really run properly. So we've been trying to manage it, trying to do all the rehab to get it right, and it's something that I've had for a period of time.
How long have you had it for?
Well, I think it's basically had a big piece of floating bone in there, and I think it must have been since 2008.
Right.
That it was
just
it was
a decade.
Yeah.
Just a decade with a floating bone.
Just been barring up and being super tough, you know what I mean? Just getting on with it. I am very hard. And I just gave up the ghost, really. I tried a do or die session a week ago on Monday to give it one more chance after an injection, and it was no good. So I just pulled the plug and said, right, let's get it hopped on. And Tuesday night, I was.
If you had a floating bit of bone in there, did they not say it'd be easier just to whip it out rather than wasting all this time?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where
new club syndrome that you don't want to be straight off.
Yeah, well, actually, the thing is, because I've had it for such a long time, it actually is all right. Well, normally you sort of go to the off season, rest, start, and it'll be fine. Yeah. And it would just get stiff and creaky, but we're all getting stiff and creaky in varying ways. And exactly. You're going to trip down the mic stand or something like that. Someone drops a camera in your foot, the only time you're going to get injured. Or someone wants your lunch money.
Yeah. That's about the only time. Yeah, you cracked that one already.
That was my first show back. That was when you were doing a tour of the US.
Or a conquer related injury or plot other games he plays with his mates. Right,
keep getting on your injury.
It's normally okay, but I obviously wanted to start well with Saints. It wasn't a problem. It just kept getting worse. Normally, I've had an injection and it's been absolutely fine, but I think it just had enough. And so we've now taken the bone out and done another few bits and pieces. So I should be back able to move slightly less worse than I was before.
We have got so much to talk about. I'm actually genuinely interested in this, though. Mm. What number operation is that for you and your career?
It's actually only number 3.
Is it really?
Yeah. I haven't had
the other two.
So I had a very basic tendon scrape on my knee. Yeah. I had tendonitis. That wasn't really nothing. And then my toe injury.
Oh yeah.
Actually, it's bullshit. This is number 4. Sorry, right. I can't count. And then I had my finger fixed. We talked about it on another show.
Yeah.
But actually, the biggest one was my toe injury after Australia. That was kind of out for 8 months. But touch wood, I've been okay with things. It's only been little bits this finger hit popping out when I was falling asleep or turning the light switch off. I had it strapped.
The light switch out.
No, basically I had it strapped all the time, and I remember it had been absolutely fine. It was starting to recover, and on the lines, Scott Cornell shook my hand, and as he shook my hand, my finger just went popped. He didn't notice, but I did. It doesn't hurt, but I was like. And then obviously it's so strapped, I was struggling to get back in, but it was bad. I was on holiday and I switched the light off in the hotel room and my finger would pop out, and I was like, well, that's, you can't avoid getting that done.
That's extraordinary.
And then the ankle was it. So I've actually been, in comparison to most people, I've been okay. I'm still not comfortable in hospitals or very much enjoy general anaesthetic. I still find it very weird. Where they're like, right, and they sort of rush you through, in the movies, it's like, right, count backwards to 10.
Yeah.
They're like, right, James, see you later, you're going under now. You're like, what?
Start in the next thing. How many, you did your spleen?
Yeah, that was an operation, though.
That was on the pitch in Vegas,
wasn't it?
That's the best one if you read it out. Yeah. That's two broken ribs, punctured lung and a lacerated liver, yeah.
How did remind me of the incident?
It was in against Wales in 2008, I think, Six Nations.
Yeah.
It might be, yeah, or maybe later. And I dive for a ball, and I land on the back of Shane Burns' heel.
What's Lee Burn? Lee Burns, Wales.
Oh, sorry, Shane Burns, Ireland. Lee Burns' heel, and his sort of heel broke my two ribs and punched my leg in the studs.
And how long were you in hospital for that one?
I was in intensive care for 5 days, I think.
Bloody hell. And where does that rank? Because you've done four. How many operations? You're now being put back together and looking very good for it. But how many have you had in total?
I've had down the right side. I've got a metal rod in my leg. I've got three metal screws in my foot. I had a reattachment of my ligament inside on my left ankle, elbow, and then shoulder.
Right.
I think that's it.
It's fascinating. From my perspective, talking to you two about it, because we read every week, so-and-so's injured, they'll be back in 6 weeks, rehab. But you don't actually ever hear what that rehab is like. And I mean, the injuries you've just catalogued there, do they give you problems now?
Not,
does anything hurt when you get up in the morning? Or?
Yeah, nothing that I've had an op on hurts. So, but I still get sore back and a sore neck from... But that's just the grind of the game of 17 years or whatever. But I think... What you don't hear about is actually rehab's probably more when you've got a proper job.
Right.
But you also sometimes like an injury because it means you actually get a holiday at some point as well.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's welcomed that you can sort of have a bit of a de-stressor and not worry. But then as soon as you're back, after the immediate 2 week post-op, then you're into rehab, you'll be doing four sessions a day and you're getting flogged by a physio who wants to be really mean to you, so because he's got his job,
someone like you,
his job's on the line where he's got to get you back in a certain window that they're expecting it, or he gets in trouble. So you train a lot harder when you're injured than when you do when you're playing.
Are you well looked after when they say, right, we're gonna have to do this, or is it fairly, right, gotta get it? Is it quite sort of business, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, it is business. I think what's interesting, you just talk about the you know, you talking to us about the kind of injuries, is I talk a lot to a lot of people, you know what I mean? And when the guys were talking, I just talk a lot, full stop. And I was talking to the guys who kind of read the scans. And interesting enough, you know, if you scanned a rugby player's body in comparison to, say, someone the same age, a normal person, you know, you would look at that and go, oh my God, you need to have this and this done. But a lot of these guys who read these reports on after x-rays and MRIs don't know how people are still operating. But you would have a scan, have a look at it, do something at your ankle, and be absolutely fine, able to function. But then a normal person in the street, you'd look at that and go, I think this is probably time we operate. But we have a lot more of a kind of a threshold to pain, dealing with stuff. We have a lot more wear and tear. And actually, you know, I always try to put it off. And the reason I've waited so long to have it is I think, you know, your body is never the same once you let surgery in on it. I think it's important, you need to have it, but just factually, you know, you're kind of entering, there's risk of infection, risk of things changing, you know, whatever it might be. Yeah. But more often not, when you've got to fix something, you've got to fix something. And I always wait to the last opportunity when you definitely know you need to get it done. And when it is business, it was literally like on Monday, I did my final running session halfway through it, and I just turned and said, that this is no good. And then make a phone call, boom, one email. Next day, I'm down in London and getting operated on.
Yeah, I'm sort of the other way around. I'm like, if it needs opening, just do it.
Tidy it up.
Because
now,
you know, I had bad experience in 2005 with a sort of, I don't know what the right word is, where I had a broken foot and it wouldn't heal, where I ended up having my screws in it. And obviously, I wanted to try and get on that Lions trip.
Yeah.
In 2005.
Probably good thing you didn't get on that.
Well, there is a flip side to that. But then it. So the first guy I saw said, just leave it 6 weeks and it might heal itself.
Yeah.
And I wasted 6 weeks. And if I hadn't have wasted that 6 weeks,
I
would have been really happily being on that Lions tour.
Yeah.
But still, you know, it goes up as one of the things I wish I'd done, because I ended up not being on Lions.
No.
If you want an experience like 2005 Lions tour, just go over to New Zealand and get 15 kiwis to pick shit out of you.
In the pouring rain.
I'll throw a bucket of water on you. Yeah. They'll beat you up in a red kit.
Just pick me up and drop me on my head.
Okay, thanks. Fine.
We've got quite a juicy bit on 2005 coming up later in the show. Nice little segue, that. That's what I'm here for. Let's just quickly tell you about the extra detail that we got then. We've obviously got, we're going to look back at the big call of the weekend, that TMO incident at Twickenham in the dying embers of the game between England and the All Blacks. We'll discuss Eddie Jones' comments towards Japan as well. Will Ireland go number one in the world? We are going to hear from two legends of the game, Tana Umaga and Brian O'Driscoll, occasion. As I mentioned, 2005 and all that, and they discuss that tackle. Scotland take on South Africa this weekend. All eyes on Stuart Hogg's big move towards Exeter, plus this week's perfect pour, which, good news for you, has nothing to do with rugby.
Excellent.
Got a chance.
You have got a chance. I hope one hope in hell. Let's get straight into it then. You were at Twickenham. You were on the sofa, I imagine, watching.
Watching Sky Sports, you know, casually take the piss out of me, you and Will Greenwood. Yeah. I will get my revenge, Greenwood. I will get my revenge.
In this life or the next. Yeah.
He's very good at leaving you hanging on the day and then he'll look exactly. back and make jest at you.
I know.
He's given him a lot of
He was like, oh, you know, we're all best of friends. How happens to the best of us? Next minute, dabbing me in the eye. I'll get you, Greenwood. I'll get you as well.
No, I didn't see you. I was there. Mine was in love and affection.
Right, I'm going to throw you and Woodward up the side of that thing. Just take out Clive for no reason.
Doing week four.
Collateral damage.
Doing week four. Offside, yes or no? How long do you want to spend talking about this?
I don't really... It's in the book, it's offside, so it's offside, isn't it? But there are many factors that you could have gone that it wasn't. But if you look at whether he was offside by the letter of the law, he's offside. So there you go.
Well,
you've had one or two problems with breakdown offsides before, haven't you?
Well, first of all, I didn't know what a breakdown was.
True that.
So I'm not really the best person to ask whether it was offside. I didn't know what one was. I think, as I said in the over the South Africa game, and I'll be fondly reminded of, as I have been on Twitter, I said, shut up, move on, no one cares, because it's done.
Right.
I think I've watched it back a few times. I think just what goes into this that makes the melting pot even more interesting is that the TMO was South African.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
like, it's a last ditch thing. It is, you know. So I just think, look, the decision was made. You can take it apart in so many different ways. And I think as long as you look at those incidents and go, is there going to be some consistency in future? Is there going to be some learning?
Some kissing. And yeah,
kissing? Sorry. Some consistency.
Yeah, and teeth. We'll have those
six next week as well. Under the laugh, a full straight out. I just think you just need the consistency. Yeah. And just look a little bit about what the TMO can actually do and you know, the power he has.
That's bang on. I don't think a TMO is there to make that fine call. If a ref misses that, or if a ref...
It's contagious. Welcome to our English listeners and viewers.
If the ref makes a decision that once he scored the try, he's like, I'm not sure whether he was onside or offside. Can you just check that? That's when the TMO... I don't think it comes in to say there could be a possible offside. I think you still need to leave some decisions to the three men who are in the middle.
Here's a different way to cut it. Is it good or bad for rugby that post-South Africa, the raging debate, which was a raging debate, went till Wednesday about Owen Farrell's tackle, and this weekend the raging debate is still going on about the TMO. Is it a good thing or a bad thing that the way the laws are applied seem to be polarising opinions so strongly? It gets headlines and it gets people talking, but is that a problem for the game in the long run?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it gets more people talking about it, but at the end of the day, I prefer refs to make those calls when they're blatant to see. There is stuff that goes that a referee and touch judges might not ever be able to see, but then there's certain stuff you expect the three men to be able to... or three people, because there's women obviously reffing as well now, to be able to pick up, and you trust them to make that. If they miss them, then if they're that bad, they'll get picked up by sighters anyway.
I would say that I don't think it's too much of an issue that people are talking about it. What I find difficult is that if you're going to have law changes and you're going to structure the game, you're going to be penalising a lot more, then the referee comes into play so much more. Yeah. And I'm always a big believer that if you lose, however... you know, toilet the referee might have been, you should never use that as an excuse. Yeah. A referee should never decide a game of rugby, ultimately.
Yeah.
And I think as a player, you know, the worst thing you could ever do is go to someone, oh, you lost, you go, well, your thing is, mate, the referee did this, and he didn't penalise it. That's just bullshit. Yeah. That's a loser just talking out.
To be fair, Eddie Jones didn't, and none of the players have. Yeah. It's a very media-driven
And
story.
I was reading, I'm reading a book at the moment, Spot Goes to the Circus. No, I'm reading... I actually read a book on Jack Ripper, and I thought it was quite prevalent to this show, because we've talked a lot about social media, and the reason that, you know, all this stuff is kind of hyped up around rugby is everyone's now got opinions readily available, and it's just cycling through, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, obviously, and it's rolling, and it's 24-hour news. And interesting, at the time Jack Ripper was going along, there was something like 1,000 letters a month of people claiming that they were Jack the Ripper and like putting their opinion in.
Really?
And it goes to show that there were nutters oh, I've had an opinion, voicing an opinion and sharing it the entire time. And now it's just kind of progressed fully into sport. And whereas before they used to, you know, every time there is a murder or a serial killer, someone owns up to it consistently. Yeah. We've now got a thing with sport where we've got such a platform where all of these things are going to be talking points. And the problem is that, you know, there were big key game winning or losing decisions. But every week this is going on. And I think it is a good thing for sport because it's allowing people to feel so much more involved. What you have to do is, as players and as people in charge, is step back and go, hold on a minute, let you lot fight that out. That's great, but we're not going to take any interest in it. And when it comes to the weekend, we don't worry about it. What happens is when people, journalists, broadcasters and everyone else starts worrying about that rabble talking nonsense and letting it affect what they're doing, you just got to let them get on with it and go, they're still whinging about that. Yeah. Well, actually, we're worried about Japan. You know?
So actually, World Rugby did that. They came out and said, back the decision, move on. And which didn't actually get a lot of traction because everyone else is shouting so loudly and polarising opinion.
At the end of the day, we could have taken a drop in and had a crack at winning anyway. Yeah. So
true that. Should we talk about some of the positives? Just before that, how frustrated were you at full time? Just before we talk about the positives, did it feel like it was one that got away? You don't get many chances to beat New Zealand.
Yeah, the only thing I was frustrated about was the 2 minutes before half time.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, I think it was at 38-30, they still hadn't scored.
Yeah.
And we just didn't manage, for whatever reason, that minute and a half period.
Yeah.
And we suddenly allow them to get 8 points.
It was a complete inversion of the week before, where England had been battered by the box, but were still in it, and suddenly...
Yeah. For a team like New Zealand, that's a huge momentum shift. Them going into the changing room, if they were 14-0 now, it's a completely different team talk to what they had to do. And their tails were up, and it sort of...
From there.
I mean, I it didn't feel to me when you look at the stats that they had all the ball and all the territory.
But they did. Yeah, that's what it said at half time.
So it was a few Guinnesses, but
I think it's
very on message.
Yeah,
very good. I think it's you know, they played exactly like we said they needed to play, where unbelievable pressuring the defence. Don't worry about their threats. Don't become wide eyed and say, oh, so and so's going to do this. Just pressure them and hound them. And I thought in that kind of first 30 minutes, we did that incredibly well. The one thing about New Zealand is you just can't switch off. And just a moment where you feel that just we're comfortable here. Yeah. That's when they get you because we talked about the handling skills, those ability, they will just cut you. And they did have more territory and more ball, and they just do what they do well. And that's the problem. You can never derail them. So you have to constantly do it. And I think it's a good lesson for the guys. I think it was very frustrating by the end of full time, because I thought so many people put their bodies on the line. And to play that way, which is the only way to beat the All Blacks, it emotionally takes out of you, physically it takes you out of you. I'd love to see how the guys were in camp this week in comparison to South Africa, where it was clearly more of a bone on bone, but because these guys were constantly getting off the floor, getting in the line, hitting. You know, if you watched, there was a great phase, I think, where Mark Wilson, I thought, played well again. You know, came up with great line speed, hit Bowden Barrett. He goes, you know, Mike Brown almost gets the intercept. All the boys are coming forward the entire time with great line speed. That takes a lot out of you, and I think that'd be a great lesson to realise that to win at international rugby, you've got to go for the full
Mike
80.
Yeah, Brown. Henry Slade.
Henry Slade. Sorry.
But I was just wondering.
We've been out of the camp a long time.
Sorry.
Brownie's run off from the top.
Gone and forgotten.
Sorry. I meant
that. He's done a John Terry.
Yeah.
Run in.
But he almost got it, you know what I mean? And it's just great work from them.
Sam Underhill.
Yeah, really good.
Really good.
Yeah, I thought.
You carry on.
No, I thought he was very good. I thought he brought his point of difference out, which is all you want from a player, really. I thought, you know, physically he was great. You know, in terms of those tackles, you know, good work rate. Obviously, to put 25 tackles in at international rugby is hard work. I thought he was very impressive. I think, and also what's great for me is that he started getting on the end of those tips and getting a few more carries now, because you need that. You know, I think if you're playing with Billy, who's going to get maybe 20 carries a game, and you add Mako in there, you know, they get 20 carries each, that's not necessarily a problem. But then when you've got those out the mix, you need your back row to step up and carry. And I thought Mark Wilson did that really well. I thought Sam started to do that really well too.
Would you have scored it?
Well,
all fairness, I am devoed for him, because that's his highlight reel.
Yeah, I know.
Turning Bowden Barrett inside out and then scoring in the corner. And
to beat the All Blacks in the 77th minute.
It's just disappeared into space.
It's a brutal game.
If you cut it well, edit it well, you claim that happened.
I reckon it'll be in there in the testimonial dinner anyway.
Yeah, because legit that happened, so you just don't... People go, oh, is that also try? You do it, you cut off the end. No referee thing.
Yeah. Who caught your eye?
I thought Sinclair's been good for the past 2 weeks. I think he uses. I know, obviously, Mako's one of the best at the bringing in those tips, but he started doing that in the South Africa game, and I thought he carried well again on the weekend, which is good to see because we need those people who necessarily aren't going to start, but stepping up again. I thought Wilson was good. I thought Underhill came in and did their job. I thought the weather suited how we wanted to go after them in D. Really, but that's what we, you know, that's the strength of the England defence when it's a little bit damp in the air. I almost said that M word that everyone hates. You can get off the line and get after them, and they did that outstandingly well. And I just thought, you know, I thought Ashi coming back, getting that try. I thought Ben Youngs's pass to get it over the top to him was good as well. Because I'm sometimes critical of Ben Youngs, but it was a great team effort, obviously, and a better in terms of performance from South Africa. A far better performance which is what they needed.
Does it re-announce England as a World Cup contender, or have we got to see a little bit more?
No, I think
puts them back on track.
Yeah, it'll put a lot of confidence in the guys, which they need, and. And the belief as well. You always need that belief that you can be frustrated, but they've still got these two games that they've got to continue getting back to where they were. And I don't think any of us doubt the quality of our players and the depth of our players. We've just got to get them back playing that rugby that we know they can play.
So moving on to this weekend, have you seen what Eddie's said?
About Japan?
Yeah, he said, we want to smash them, physically smash them. I've heard some of the things they've said. They've been cheeky. Go to the temple and pray, he goes on. We're going to be absolutely ruthless. Well, he's selling up for it against the side that he used to coach, isn't he? Well, is that helpful from a player's perspective?
Well, it's immediate pressure on the players, isn't it?
Yep. And that's why he's done it, to ramp it up.
I think he's done it as a challenge to make sure they don't mentally relax.
Gotcha.
You know.
What did they say, though? Did they say anything? Yeah, that's the thing, really. Did they
only
say anything?
He could understand them.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, exactly.
I just don't know what...
guys, here's my translation.
Yeah, exactly. He can put up whatever he likes.
Everyone's got Google Translate. That's not right, Eddie.
Yeah. I just
they said they really like England.
Yeah, I wonder what they... Thank you very much for being here. Very happy to be here. Yeah. I can't imagine what they would have said to rouse them up, but I think Tins is exactly right. I think it's, you know, when you've had emotional high against... You know, South Africa, emotional high against New Zealand, albeit with a loss. You know, that Japan game, he knows how dangerous Japan are. You know, they put five tries past New Zealand, and albeit not the best New Zealand side that could possibly be on paper, but still very, very good. Yeah. And I think Japan are dangerous. I think, you know, Jamie Joseph, who coached me at the Highlanders, I think is a very, very cunning, canny, clever coach. Mm. And he... you know, he'll have a surprise for England. And I think if you get caught napping, then Eddie just doesn't want that to happen.
I think they said something about him being a bully and that they've gone for him personally. Although he's still on all the billboards out in Japan, I think, off the back of what he did in 2015. So we shall see. For England, would you change things up or would you keep consistency in the team selection as time is short in terms of next year's World Cup?
Yeah, I'm all about a bit of consistency around now, year out. Obviously, you're going to have... players who come in anyway once they're back from fitness.
Yeah.
So you're going to get natural change over the next year, but I think you need to cement those guys who you think are your second.
So you wouldn't throw in a Thok and a Singer or a...
Well, it's saying that, I'd have no issues putting a Thok and a Singer in there in terms of what he can do. You know, you know your wingers that you've got in your front line are pretty strong. You know, so... There are one or two, but I wouldn't be making wholesale.
Cruz is out, isn't he? I thought was the standard we haven't talked about was Courtney.
Yeah.
I thought Courtney had a huge impact when he came on. I thought he should have stayed on. I know he put eight tackles in, you know, and only Sam had 10, you know, at the time, and he did it in however many minutes. Mm. And I thought he adds another carrying option, which is what England need without Billy and Mako.
He's massively developed his footwork, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has.
His contact.
Yeah. I think
he's finally got his knee right.
Yes.
And also since the Lions tour, though, previous to that, he started improving his carrying game. And then I've seen it, obviously, firsthand in working on it consistently. And he's now got the ability to change the line, change the angle at the line. You know, he's got great hands and he runs hard. He runs real hard. And I think he's just completely got that all-round game now and he's very impressive. And I don't think... he's obviously going to have to start because Cruz is not in the mix, I don't think.
Okay.
I'll tell you one thing I was disappointed about with the weekend. I know you want to move on. But I didn't like how... you were listening to the coverage stuff about, you know, like when players come on and off, how sometimes commentators and people politicise things. Mm. They make, you know what I mean? Like when a player comes off, like I think about Dylan and Jamie George. I just don't understand that, why you know, 1 minute saying, is it the end of this and the end of that? It's like, why is it your job as a commentator or person to say that? You shouldn't say that. You should say, he's had a great game, he shouldn't come off. We don't need your added bit of spice whether you think he's going to ever get picked in, because you don't know.
Are you going to cross the person?
I just remember watching it and I was thinking, I love insight and I love things like that, but I just don't think you need to politicise things. Was that the end of the Dylan Hartley reign? I was like, no, Dylan played that really well. Jamie George played well, but got a load of heat when all his throws are spot on. It was to do with great pressure and great, you know, and not great calling at some points. And I just thought that was a bit nonsense.
But you're always going to get pressure if you come on and then, you know, a lineup that was 100% goes and missed three in key areas.
But they were saying that Dylan was done by the half time, which annoyed me. I was like,
that's where the consistency is.
He's booked his place to Japan. There was one really interesting article I read this week. I think it was Owen Slott who said, would Dylan be better employed as a finisher when the pressure is on and the key leaderships, the big decisions need to be made in the last 5 minutes?
But then
to give Jamie 55, 60 minutes to scamper about.
But I think Dylan's playing really well at the moment. I think
I'm not disputing that. I just thought it was an interesting point.
No, I think it is. I think
it depends on the game, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If the game opens up in the second half, Dylan is not necessarily going to be your go-to
guy. You could probably get another 5-10 minutes out of Jamie.
But well, I was surprised how people, you know, again, observers, everyone can see what we're seeing on the TV in terms of, you know, there was a few calls that didn't go right. Retallick obviously started reading what we were doing, got up in front of us the whole time. And I think, you know, Mara called himself a couple of times. He probably thought it was open or whatever. It's not criticism of him. And they went up. And then Jamie got some heat for it. And I'm like, hold on a minute, I can see that he threw the ball really well. You can't, you know, they're only a hooker. Well, what's the bloke going to do? Throw it right up in the air and try and get it over the top? It's very hard to do.
If an underliner throw.
Yeah, you're never going to be able to do it. I was just a bit surprised by that kind of stuff, whereas it had been 100% line out. But it was interesting because commentary went, right, that's the end of Dills. Yeah. Then after the game, it was like, right, bring Dills back. And as a player, you just go, come on, that's... Let's just get a little bit more consistency here. Let's be a little bit more.
You just said that you don't listen to that. You separate yourself.
You do, yeah, you do. But you do. When you're watching it,
have 4 minutes.
When James Haskell was amazing today, you're like, all ears.
Yeah.
I separate myself.
I actually don't. Bizarrely, I don't. I genuinely don't. I get Chloe to, if she looks at anything, I say, she goes, have you seen this? It's really good. I said, that doesn't matter. She goes, have you seen that? It's really bad. No, I just don't worry about it. Because you'll know. If I came off the field and we were playing together and Tins went, I thought you had a good game, that's all I need. Or a coach goes, you had a good game in the mix. That's all that matters. Yeah. What Joe Bloggs at number 25 thought, doesn't matter.
So you're obviously talking about Stuart Barnes, who's a long-term colleague of mine and a good friend.
I'm not.
He was the one that made the comment, and he took a fair amount of heat on it. He's obviously not here to give a right of reply, but I will also just say on his behalf, it ain't easy doing what you do. And you have to make strong opinions, forget people engaged.
He flip-flops a lot, though. So
I think he gets a lot of heat, but nobody watches more rugby and does more dedication to what he does than him.
Absolutely right.
And the knowledge and experience has. It's very easy to criticise someone that has an opinion. I would never do that. I'm always straight up and down, but I always say what I think. And it was just an observational point that of anything else, I'm happy with. I just don't think you should politicise something because I don't think it's your job unless you're the one pulling the strings. And that's why I always find it...
It could be as simple as him just filling airtime, though.
As you saw last 2 weeks ago, it ain't always that easy.
Shut up! I had a delay! It was my voice.
As you saw 2 weeks ago, it isn't always that easy.
Bullshit. So I love you, Barnsley, by the way.
We love Barnsley, and, you know, maybe we'll pull up a little chair for him at some point.
Yeah, get him in.
It'll be great fun. He'd certainly have some strong points to make. I just very quickly want to ask you about Japan. Tell us, sell us, what are we going to get from them, and what is the rugby culture like out there?
Bigger than you could have imagined.
Is it really?
Yeah, and I think obviously when Japan beat South Africa, it kind of went up a notch. When I went over there, obviously we didn't know a lot about the rugby. I knew that obviously all the big companies had teams, so I played for Ricoh, Toshiba, Canon had teams. And when I signed for Ricoh, my contract was to become an employee of Ricoh. And I actually had to check to make sure that if I didn't get picked, I wasn't assembling photocopiers. because half the team were employed.
You've only done that once before. It's very dodgy. Yeah.
Like Partridge, he does a photocopier. He gets the guest on who...
Who what assembles photocopies?
Yeah, assembles photocopies.
Yeah, probably
Xerox.
Yeah, on knowing me, knowing you. Oh no, yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I had a few concerns about that, but actually, and I also thought that my physical stature was going to really help me. It didn't. I hadn't been like smashing people out of the way, but No, it didn't happen. Every team was obviously really well drilled. The university sport over there, rugby, is huge. You get 60,000 people to the big games, more so than the actual top league games a lot of the time. You know, incredible kind of tacklers, really well disciplined. Every team's kind of got 12 professionals, and the rest are employed by the company. So, you know, as we were coming back after a game, maybe have a few beers on the Shinkansen on the way back, the bullet train, they're all head down in suits the next morning, then they're coming from suits into training. I think they'll be unbelievably welcoming. I think Japan is an incredibly beautiful place, culturally amazing. And I was only there for kind of 5 months. I tried to absorb as much as I
Do you speak any of the language?
No. It is the hardest language. I mean, I'm not sharp as tall in the box, but it is the hardest language. We did a lesson, and I was like, I literally don't know what you're talking about, because there's two alphabets or something like that as well. Yeah. And there's obviously the written kind of text, and also the picture text.
Good of the picture text.
Train, cat, dog. Colouring things in. I think actually when the World Cup goes over there, I think there'll be unbelievable hosts. I think people will have a lifetime changing experience going over there. What I did find funny though was the organised cheering. There wasn't a lot of spontaneity. So for Rico, you know,
polite applause.
Yeah, it's a bit like, you know, twicking them out in you know, bravo, bravo. Not a lot of people, you know, when you go to Premiership games, a little bit more senior, you go to the Chiefs, they got that kind of thing going, or wherever
Tomahawk
else.
Tomahawk chop.
Tomahawk chop. Over there, we had a guy dressed as a dragon leading the cheering, and he would. When he started cheering, they'd all start cheering, and it was all like organised. They had songs and everything, and everyone would be there as a collective, and the fans were fantastic. They'd have they give you little pictures they'd drawn and photographs of you. It was one of the best eye-opening experiences I've ever had. Hard doing on your own. I was on my own.
Where do you live? How do you pass the time?
I lived in a little place called Futakatamagawa, which I'm assured by Rico and actually by Eddie Jones that it's the most expensive real estate in the whole of Tokyo. It's kind of this kind of next to a river, beautiful little houses and villages. But I had a little pink house. It's on YouTube somewhere. Yeah, I did a little pink house. I lived next door to Tamati Ellison, who actually was the Highlanders with me. It was kind of perfect. I went there with him and then went to the Highlanders. And I remember Boxing Day was interesting because they don't celebrate Christmas. Yeah. So all the Islanders invited me over.
You'll go to McDonald's then.
They don't even worry about it. We played on Christmas Day, got on the bus on the way, or the train on the way back, and then on Boxing Day I was sitting in the garden with lads roasting a pig on a spit, a few beers. It was a different kind of Christmas, but it was cool.
Great days. I'm looking forward to your World Cup tour. If you don't make the cut, you can.
Gulliver's. Other tours are available, possibly.
We'll book you in. Yeah. We'll all follow in your slipstream. Very good. We'll pick up on England a little bit later on in the show. But obviously, just a quick reminder, this is House of Rugby on Joe, together with our friends at Guinness, as you know. This week, we're here with Mr. James Haskell and the return of Mr. Mike Tindall. Both looking a little bashed up, but speaking very eloquently again this week. We've got the perfect pause section coming up a little bit later on, which I promise you will enjoy. Smile. Good. But before that, we're going to talk about Ireland. Obviously, taking on New Zealand, it's a massive game this weekend, 1-2 in the world. Before we dive in, I've got a little confession. I've been unfaithful this week. So I was in Dublin yesterday.
Yeah.
I went to record with Andrew Trimble.
What?
Just not ready to commit yet on a monogamous basis. I know.
How are we supposed to deal with it? We're just assessing.
It's firmly fixed. Yeah. We're just assessing things at the moment. But it's, you know.
I've seen the chat. It can't be. It's not that good, is it? Let's be honest.
Very nice, very tender. Where you're quite harsh and quite hard. He's very.
Really?
Yeah, very gentle, caring.
I've been complimentary of you consistently.
Not on screen, you haven't. And until we got to that point, I can't commit fully.
You're a consummate professional who seamlessly takes
the side. I'm not coming back on Monday.
The first show that I was on.
Yeah, you did.
But that was after we finished rolling.
We never stopped rolling around here, mate. This is Stitch Up Central.
Your show really is building in a way you could not possibly imagine.
It's Stitch Up Central. I don't apologise for any of it.
Good. The reason I bring up Andrew is because this week he sat down with two legends of the game. We mentioned 2005 a bit earlier on. Tana Umanga and Brian O'Driscoll came together invariably to talk about that tackle. Have a listen to this.
Myself and Tana have met on multiple occasions over the course of the last 10 years. And it's, you know, we put to bed what happened in 05. Yes, it was something that both of us would love to change. But ultimately, that's been parked a long time ago. But for public consumption, this is probably a good thing to genuinely show that we're over it, and everyone else should be too. So it's hard because different at different times with the Lions tour last year came back up again. You know, 12 years ago, and I get asked it in every Q&A that I've ever done. It's probably the most regularly asked question. So ultimately, there's no getting away from it. But from our perspective, we're cool.
Yeah, I mean, it only took 13 years. Mm. That's it. You draw a line under it and move on.
Well, that's the thing. It's 13 years, 147 days, and 12 hours. So, yeah, finally we got there.
Well, we finally got there. As we've always said, hindsight's a great thing. If we'd thought about it a lot earlier, we would have made sure we'd rang a lot of people when we connected. Every time we kind of bumped into each other, we probably needed a crowd. Just to make it a bit more public and prove to people that, we had put it behind us.
But, or a very popular podcast.
Well, that's right.
Would have been the perfect medium to have done it.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Where were you 13 years ago?
Yeah. You could have started this a long time ago.
Yeah, well, that brings me on actually to my next point. Tana, I'm a massive fan of yours, probably more so than a lot of Irish people because of what happened in 2005. But I'm a big fan of yours because of what happened in 2005.
There's always that one guy.
I'm the guy.
Is that the guy that takes an opportunity?
Reason being, whilst your mum's recovering, I made my debut in the 13 jersey against Australia. So, every cloud.
Yeah, that's right. And we're all in the same room. Mm-hmm. Talk about it.
Yeah. That's so, thanks for the opportunity. So, anyway, on with the rugby. So, what's the story? How do we see it? From your point of view, Tana, is obviously it's world number one versus world number two. Are Ireland, despite being world number two, are they on New Zealand's radar? Back in the day when we used to tour New Zealand, it was the Kiwis didn't know anybody apart from Brian and Polly and 13 other Muppets running around and 13 teammates. But has that changed?
Oh, it has. I don't think don't sell yourself short. Everyone knew you back home. Look, I think very much so in terms of the Irish side and what they've achieved. It hasn't gone unnoticed back home. This tour at the moment is important to our very expectant public to see how we're going to go leading into the World Cup, because there's a few questions been asked back home around some of the All Black performances and whether we have the depth to go forward.
That's always the conversation, isn't it? In around June time, November time, is that gap narrowing? And it seems like if ever there was a time, certainly from an Irish point of view, it seems like there's never been a better opportunity to close that gap.
Oh, I think completely. So. And the confidence that the Irish are playing with at the moment, you can't discount them. You can't go against them. And obviously at home, Pack Stadium. We know how tough that is, and so it'll be a great watch. That's why everyone's talking about it.
Yeah, is that how much of that is the Joe factor, Ryan? Like, is it Ireland's one thing, but Ireland with Joe is another thing? And what does life potentially look like without Joe in the future?
Well, we won't know that, will we, until he decides to move on. Be it this time, the end of the month, which is decision time, whether he's going to stay on for another cycle or not. And I really don't know. I met him a few weeks ago and he certainly wasn't giving anything away. I think the feeling here is, and we've talked a lot, today and understanding the New Zealand psyche as well, the expectation in New Zealand is to win. It's not like, oh, we hope to win the World Cup. It's like you win the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And you win the Rugby Championship every year and one of the super teams should win Super Rugby. Whereas with Joe, when you go, you go into that environment, there's not that much backslapping. There's a lot of downside and not, there's a good upside, but there's not the same upside that there is here. He wins a World Cup, gets to a World Cup semi-final, even gets to a World Cup, a final or a semi-final. He's still hailed a hero because he's the first coach to have ever done it.
He's Sergio at that stage, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He is. And he's revered in this country as well from what he's done with Leinster and now subsequently with Ireland, two championships and a Grand Slam. He's brought two Champions Cups to Leinster. So like he can do no wrong and yet the team continually gets better. He's beaten the All Blacks for the first time ever. So why would you leave that?
You can see why I've been going to Dublin. He's got some very good chat, Andrew Trimble. Tana,
and Brian O'Driscoll roaring with laughter.
I tell you why.
It's just not delivered in the Haskell way, though, is it?
No.
I tell you what's interesting, though, is that I would forgive Tana if he was sitting next to me, because he'd just pick him up and fold him up again.
Yeah. He's a proper hero in New Zealand, Tana. In, I mean, you obviously know him, played against him.
I always say he's my favourite player to have.
Is that
against.
Right?
Yeah.
And post-match, I mean, did you ever get the chance to hang with him, chat with him?
Yes. He was one of the few Kiwis who would spend time and go around and have a chat with you and everything.
Really?
Yeah.
A guy with a massive presence, is that a sort of, is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Because he's credited with resetting the All Blacks post 2003. There's a sort of deep book I think where he sort of rebuilt the culture. There's too much drinking, they got rid of it, and the team ran the show.
I'm sure he did a great job on.
I do not.
That old one, yeah.
It's
like in 2011 when whenever all the other teams went, we're not drinking, England or anyone drinking. It's like, really? Because I saw you got carried out of a bar, and the one bloke they asked from the team went, I haven't drunk in 6 months. You've never drunk, mate. What about the rest of your mates? I won't name names, but that was bullshit.
That's
another show.
Yeah.
Why I enjoyed playing, he was as hard as nails on there, but as honest as the day comes, and then had the off the field that made you like him as well. So I loved the challenge of always playing against him. He was one of those guys that I sort of looked up to, and I was coming up through Bath, and when I was actually probably coming out of school, sorry Tanner, but you know, that sort of side of it, and then to get to sort of play against him was along with playing against Frank Bunce, that was one of my highlights.
Yeah. The Bunce Little combination,
Horan as well when he was at St Andrews was obviously a big one to play against.
I've never asked you about that tackle. On the Umaga O'Driscoll, the dislocation of the male army.
Look, he obviously didn't.
it has probably
be a red card now.
Yeah,
but I don't think there was there was always the talk that it was intentional that they were going to go after him. I just think Kev Mealamu and him just got it wrong.
Yeah.
There's no way, knowing Tanner from how I know him, that there was any intention.
Yeah.
I just think it was something that went awry.
Because he was also, you flip it around, he looked after Colin Chavis, didn't he? He got that sportsman's award for looking up for fair play in that regard.
And he still comes out with the best line to a referee. Mate, we're not playing tiddlywinks.
He does. Have you ever come up with anything that good?
No. What do you need to see for it to be a breakdown?
After last time, we know he calls them rules.
Rules. Exactly. Oh, you've done better this week, actually. You're learning.
They're two of my favourite players.
Are they?
Well, yeah, I love them. I mean, I've met Tyne a few times, and he's incredible, and Brian O'Driscoll was probably the best player I've ever played against. I remember the
not
time...
Not with.
Played against.
Yeah, not with. That's what I said.
Oh, right, fine. I wondered for a minute. I was thinking, what have you said then? How do I get out of that one? Yeah.
He was a heck of a player, wasn't he?
I remember that time when we first played against him at Leinster, where he chipped over top of Voice, he volleyed it, went over again, and then scored.
Yeah.
I was like, right, well,
applause. What just happened?
But not as bad as when we played my very first game for WAS. I was 17, I was still at school, and I got played in a pre-season game against Claremont, and I was packing down against Olivier Mania. And I remember that the ball went along the wing. He was on the wing, and he was running, and I went to tackle him. And as I got him, he just flicked the ball out the back door inside the winger who scored. And I honestly went, I was like, I'm completely out of my depth here. I just don't understand how I'm supposed to deal with that.
So how many times have you actually applauded on the field at someone else's play? I've done it once, and it was to Rabini Dathoen.
Oh, yeah.
When who was he playing for down in
Argentina, wasn't it?
And literally, we... Boys were like, look at the state of the winger. He's so fat. And then after about 45 minutes, the boys were like, holy shit, who is this guy? And literally, Ollie Morgan, he'd like danced around Ollie Morgan, fallen into it, then thrown a one-handed offload through his legs to someone in the back. And I was just like running after him.
Do I remember that game? Because they were wearing the bright orange and he looked like a traffic cone.
Do you remember that, the 2003 Scotland game?
Yeah, two tries he scored.
Oh, my Lord.
I used to watch them at highlight reel. I think I was 2003. Yeah. Just still at school then, so I'd be watching that. Yeah,
some of the stuff he did in when he was playing for the All Blacks.
Do you think Thao Thao is the greatest wasted talent that you've seen in your lifetime?
Well, how many caps?
That's a heavy question.
Yeah, it is a heavy question. How many caps did he end up getting? I know he scored a lot of tries, but would you say it's wasted?
If he'd ate right and he'd trained
would
harder,
would he have been the same?
But I mean, just the individual skill. I mean, those tries against Scotland were, you know, at school you were like, you know, you had YouTube then, but whatever we were looking at, it would have been, yeah, it was amazing to watch.
He ripped it up for the Blues as well with Howlett.
You got player of the year, didn't he?
Was it Carlos Spencer as well? They had Spencer, Howlett, him.
Sammy Tupou.
Yes, that's when you know before I went to Super 15. That's what I imagined the Super 15 was like, or what Super 12 thing, because just Sky had all those games and they would cover them, and you would just see highlight reels of them throwing the ball, him like sidestepping, Carlos Spencer crossfield kicking in his own goal line.
Yeah.
And at school when we were playing touch or whatever, you'd always pretending to be one of those guys. And obviously not very successful. I kick it, goes behind me 50p feet.
I was doing those 5 metre passes, left to right.
Someone sent in a video of your chip and chase against Stade Francais.
Yeah. We'll have some fucking respect for people here, because I tell you what, I'm fully
from 15 years ago.
I'm fully behind the self-deprecating.
We've got to talk about
at some point. Got to remember that I'm actually all right.
You're an achiever. Number one, number two in the world, as you've played Ireland this year.
Yes,
call it.
You upset the Irish last time.
Are you aware how much you've upset the Irish?
A little bit, yeah. But I did know that was coming, because
what's interesting,
I put in a good word for you yesterday, actually.
What's interesting is you obviously upset the Irish, that normally, you know, nobody cares what I say. Everyone goes, oh, shut up. You know, I promise I say the wrong thing here, everyone will care. Apart from the Kiwis, they won't care unless you're on that stuff.co.uk. Haskell writes us off. I think it'll be a lovely game, and hopefully it'll end in a draw.
Everyone's a winner.
Yeah, exactly.
Go on. Give us some strong opinion on it. Will Ireland beat the All Blacks?
I think they're very capable of doing that, 100%.
Get off the fence.
No, I'm just saying they are very capable. I don't think they will this weekend.
You don't? Because?
I think because, you know, when Ireland played them in Chicago and they beat them, and, you know, they completely, you know, decked them, and then they played them a following period and they were a completely different animal, way more fired up. I think after this performance against England, especially in that first 20 minutes, they will have a big sharp and a big waken. They'll have a reset and they'll come out all guns blazing. But I hope Ireland do win.
Given what you said a couple of weeks ago, if Ireland do beat the All Blacks, would that change your mind as Ireland head to the World Cup?
No, it won't. It won't change
my mind. I'm giving you a chance.
And
he is not taking it.
It won't change my mind on what I believe where they are now. What I would add to what I said 2 weeks ago, which is basically I don't think they can win a World Cup playing the way they play at the moment.
Okay.
Now, what they are getting done is getting wins, but under Smith, they have developed so much. So I'm not saying that in a year they can't develop their more than just... So let's say I think they did 400 passes on the weekend. How many of them were just straight to forwards with two men either side of him and they run into a brick wall? Why did Argentina have a lot of success? Because they stopped them on the gain line.
Yeah.
Now, Argentina made 9 line breaks to their 1 or something, or 2. I think there's more to it, but I'm not saying that Ireland can't develop that. But at the moment, they're relying heavily on their forwards to do a job, who are doing an amazing job, and they're probably, I would probably say, the form pack in the world.
Yep.
I just think they need to add a few more strings.
If Ireland do win the World Cup, you will be the front page of every newspaper.
But genuinely, I would be happy if they won the World Cup, if they played a little bit of rugby. What you can watch when you see Ireland play is you can see that they have a very strict structure that they play under. And one of the reasons why they probably got in trouble on the weekend was they didn't have Colin Murray. So they're Conor Murray. He's a good actor.
Conor Murray.
He's a great guy on radio. They didn't have... Their exits weren't quite as good. And they're going up for high ball. They didn't... Which is normally their strength. They had enough control anyway. They had about 65-70% of possession and territory, I think. Yeah. So, but there is just that question mark. Now, I hope to be proved wrong, but I just think they need...
You're waiting to be proved wrong.
Yeah, I'm waiting to be proved. They just need a little bit more. If New Zealand get 9 line breaks against them on Saturday, they will convert most of them, because that's what they do.
Yeah.
I think Argentina just missed a couple of opportunities because they tried to chip it and...
Yeah.
Do a few too many things. But again, it just showed how good Ireland are in the fact that they all came off the field saying they didn't play well, but they won. And that's what ultimately I have to bow down to, is the fact that they win games, they win test matches. So just because I don't like the style that they play doesn't mean they're not getting the job done. And that's what they did at Soldier Field, and that's what they'll try and do this Saturday. I think Haskey's right in terms of what happened at Soldier Field will... New Zealand will make sure they watch that probably this week and go back. So can they win? Yes, they definitely can. But I think New Zealand will just be too clinical for them.
I think it's fair to say he's doubled rather than quit. Yeah.
I will say that I think
We just talked, not flip-flacking around. I still believe that they need to work on their whole game in terms of a little bit of variety. Into one-out runners or a runaround.
Wait, mate, you have an opinion. You have an opinion. You might just not be on your own podcast anymore, but you have an opinion.
See yourself out.
Remember, Joey's an Irish company, I think, originally. Yes. So
we'll be back next week.
Tins will be seeing you. I will say that the one thing about Ireland as well is obviously over, you know, for me, they've always been one of the hardest teams to play against. They've, you know, I've lost two Grand Slam games to them. And I think, you know, they've obviously been great against Northern Hemisphere sides, but they are now a big team. You know, a big game team, and I think that they've got that ability to do that. They've got the experience, they've been there, and I think once you taste you know, beating the All Blacks, it gives you that confidence. Once you consistently beat the Southern Hemisphere sides, you know how to win ugly. And I think, you know, Tins said it, we're talking about it off screen, about, you know, the Argentina game. At the end of the day, whether it's the prettiest thing in the world, they're winning games. Yeah. And I think that's all that matters, because at the end of the day, however exciting you are, you want to win silverware and you want to win that World Cup.
That's a massive thing for them. Is big games they're comfortable winning, and they have that. They have a big game mentality where they can raise their game 20%. Yep. You know, I never won at Croke Park because they always beat us. They have that ability to just step their game up, and I imagine they will this weekend.
You won at Lansdowne there, didn't you?
Yeah, we did.
Might have found it. What happened to you when you scored that try?
I did something to my ankle.
Did you?
Yeah. I don't know. I missed
those that remember will remember. How good is Joe Schmidt as a coach? And from hanging out with the Irish players on the Lions tour, he is a man for great detail.
Yeah, massive detail. That's the overriding factor. I mean, I've actually, post-game, I always understand what privilege it is to play for your country, and also how nice it is to get a chance to play against players that you don't normally come across. So, you know, like Tin said about Tana coming over to meet the team out of the Kiwis, I always try and talk to as many kind of Irish players, Welsh players, Scottish players as I can do, coaches, just to meet people, because I think it's nice to make those contacts, because, you know, people take it for granted. And I think in the era of professionalism, we now go, we have to do some functions, it's kind of over quite quickly, you know, drone on a few boring old people to talk nonsense, and then you have to go. Whereas I would actually much prefer you having to sit with the lads, tell a few war stories, have a little chat, get to know these people. And actually, you know, Joe Schmidt's the guy that I've consistently spoken to after games.
Have you?
Yeah, always incredibly friendly, always remembers my name, which is helpful. You know, he's an amazing individual. I think, you know, he's obviously had some family stuff that's well, it's been really hard for him, but his dedication and focus is incredible. And the boys have always just said, unbelievably detailed, you know, really kind of runs a very tight ship. But gets results, and I, you know, I've always been really impressed with him.
Yeah, I shared a bed with him actually on a plane out to Japan.
That's amazing.
Not literally a bed.
Cut that. Yeah.
But you know when you've got this massive sort of booth beds. We're going to have a World Cup pool draw.
No, I don't think we do that.
Yeah, we don't know about
public school
thing.
Front.
Public school thing was it again?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You'll do anything to get another contract.
Too true. Tell me about it right now. But I couldn't agree more. It was sort of one of those things where he wandered around the corner and I could see him think, oh God, and I was thinking, geez, this is going to be a long flight. And actually nattered away really, really happy. And very strong views on the media. Fascinating to sort of hear what he had to say about, you know, the state of the game and things like that. Great guy. And interesting to see where he ends up. A lot of people tipping him to take over New Zealand, which just very quickly leads us on to potentially who might come in Ireland. Obviously, Andy Farrell being picked up, Stuart Lancaster, Leo Cullen. Would you see a sort of, I mean, that's quite a strong triumvirate potentially there to take over. Irish rugby seems to have its pipeline coming together quite nicely in that regard.
Yeah, I think, you know, we obviously talked about how much, you know, Leinster and the Irish boys love Lanny, and how successful, you know, Big Faz has been over there. You know, again, I think you've got to credit a lot of the way Ireland's been with some of the defensive stuff that he's brought into place, in terms of they've added that other physical dimension. So I think they've been great. You know, a great place if they were all to take over.
We shall see what comes.
Yeah, I think so. I think it'd be great for Lanny to then get back into that side of it if it went that way. I think what Faz has done in terms of, for New Zealand on the weekend, they have to get the breakdown right.
Yeah.
You know, you look at Levy and obviously shame for Sean O'Brien again to get another injury, but what they did at breakdown time, they just slow ball, and I think they had 8 turnovers or something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's going to be a big side. You got to get that side. And that's where they get their possession back, get their penalties, play corners.
Have you sent Sean O'Brien a little get well soon?
Do you know what? I haven't. I texted him good luck before the game.
That went well.
I am like the angel of doom, honestly.
You are, I know.
I try not to. I will message him.
Talking of touring lions, Stuart Hogg from Glasgow to Exeter. £500,000 smackers, apparently. Sorry to be indiscreet, but big money these days. Is he a little bit stardust that's going to take Exeter from right at the top of the English game to right at the top of the European game?
Well, he's definitely not going to not help, is he? Yeah. I was trying to talk him at Rory Lawson's wedding. I was trying to talk him into going to Gloucester because he almost went before his last contract to Gloucester. I think for him, it'll be a fantastic team for him to go to in terms of the way they play. Suits his style. I think how Rob Baxter manages his players in terms of. I just got a feeling talking to him that he felt a lot of pressure on his shoulders every time he went on the field.
Yeah.
And I think Rob Baxter will manage that really well and allow him to feel he can express himself and not worrying about what comes off the... You know, he's that player where you've got to sort of go to all your 14... Right, just whatever Hoggy does, just get behind him and do it because... Yeah, 80% of the time, it works every time.
I think, from an outsider, I always see how, what a collective the Exeter boys are.
They seem to have a great time.
I think they seem to do a lot of stuff together as a team. I think you're probably right, obviously Glasgow's fantastic, but, almost being that big starfish, in a little pond must be quite hard. I'm not saying I've ever had to experience. but I can imagine that, going to Exeter will be great just because they hold on to the ball so much. So, when you're giving, when they go 30, 40 phases or whatever and keep it, being able to put him into positions of more space where you're not asking him to literally score off first phase counter-attack when he can be a bit more choosy about his lines, and then you suddenly find him popping up in space and he can use his skill set. I think that'd be really good for them.
Perfect poor time, Hask. We're going to give you a free shot here. It's a home run. You have referenced, as many others have about you as well, that you love The Office, the UK version. You have 119.5 seconds. That is the time it takes to pour the perfect pint of Guinness to name 15 characters from The Office. Your time starts now.
David Brent.
1.
Gareth Keenan.
2.
That's all I know. Chris Finch.
3.
What's the lady's called?
I can't think of any bloody names.
Not a very good response to the game.
Well, you should have done on Harry Potter. I like David Brennan. I didn't sound like the whole bloody Office.
Who does Martin Freeman play?
Oh, I can't remember his name. How bad's that?
His surname is Canterbury.
Oh, you lost me. What's the fat bloke? Nick, someone. He's the Scotch egg. Nick.
Yes, that's on here somewhere. Yeah, you can have that.
Who else?
Who is the secretary? Not the secretary. The one.
Gaunt.
That, yes, correct.
Yeah.
Who does Stephen Merchant play?
Oh,
the Og Monster.
Yeah, the Og Monster. I remember that. Honestly, you're struggling here. Yeah, I know.
Tim.
You're just telling me. We're just listing.
Tim.
Yeah.
Who's the very large guy with the goatee and the glasses?
Yeah, that's what I thought. He was the one. I thought his name was Nick, wasn't it?
No.
Okay. He just randomly just named someone else that gave him.
Keith.
Keith.
He's just reading them out. Pretty How about we check what the perfect pour should
just
be?
Shout a few names out.
John. Terry.
Who is
Andy.
Who does Patrick Ballady play?
Who the is Patrick Ballady?
Very famous actor. He was in Mistresses as well. Neil Godwin.
Fine.
Neil Godwin. You talk a good game. 90 seconds gone.
What's the footballer called? Bowyer. What's his first name?
Lee.
There you go. Yes, Lee.
Yes, correct. Lee.
We've had a stinker. Lee. I hope you can edit cobble this together.
You know, it's actually getting harder and harder to turn this into a really sort of juicy segment of the game.
No, it's not.
Section.
It's not.
You don't know anything about rugby, so you know lots about The Office. Right. So we give you a home run on The Office, and you've got 2.
No, no, sorry. Harry Potter,
4,
I can do.
3.
Well, so Sherlock
1.
Holmes.
Next week, we'll bring you something.
Towers.
Do you want to write your own questions next week?
Yeah. I mean, I've done this perfect poor thing. I just. Whoever's in The Office coming up with this is just nonsense.
Show 5, and Jane's actually getting angry.
How about I pour? Why don't I pour a Guinness? Why don't we just actually show how easy it is to pour a Guinness?
We could do that every week.
No, just do it once. Just show that's 1 week, and then we'll come up with something else the next week.
Do you want to choose a topic other than Harry Potter for next week's
question?
It's like Mastermind.
You could do it Mastermind-ish.
Yeah, you get to choose your topic from now on.
No, right, Harry Potter next week. Right.
Harry Potter questions for next week.
And you have to study up.
Yeah, fine.
Are you an Office fan? Or are you more of a Crown fan.
I do like The Office, but I wouldn't have had a...
Yeah, nobody knows that. You know Gareth Keenan and David Brent.
Two that he named.
Good.
Keith,
I think we've ended on a really positive note.
Yeah. Is that the end
You're
of the
in
show?
A tantrum.
I'm,
you're
not
I'm not having a tantrum.
I'm just trying to think what else we could do. Actually, when I named the team, I the only person I couldn't get was Alex Good for the fullback.
You played in the game. I mean, if you can't name your teammates, right, one of the highest points of your career, that is a very disappointing state of affairs.
No, okay, that is a good point. Why we should play like some sort of game or like puzzle or something. I don't know, like, you know, vary it.
Brilliant. On that bombshell, we're going to do puzzles next week as part of the perfect.
No, we're doing Harry Potter.
Then a Rubik's Cube.
And a Rubik's Cube.
And you have
Tom Wood. Great for a podcast.
Tom Wood.
Great for a podcast. You're doing a Rubik's Cube.
Which is a video
game.
We've
got to go. I think Tom consistently to wrap it up. The show is unraveling.
Tell me if it's sharp. Tom Wood can smash a Rubik's Cube like you wouldn't believe. It's like Rain Man.
Brilliant. Good. I'm glad we finished on that pearl of wisdom. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. There you have it. Thank you very much indeed to all of you who have been watching, subscribing, and very much getting involved. Please do remember to like, share, comment wherever you can. One or two nice comments once again this week. One or two slightly sharper ones as well, but we'll just tip X those out. Thank you, Lord, for coming along. Thank you to James for hobbling his way down as well. Be careful on your crutches. Fill your time nicely. Have a great weekend, all. Enjoy whatever rugby it is that you're watching, and we'll speak to you next week.
You've been listening to the House of Rugby on Joe. Together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.co.uk for the facts.